Now we'll move into item number 11, Baker Lake and Skagit River sockeye salmon review, reefing, and public input. So Aaron?
Thanks, Steve.
By the way, I want to compliment you on your admirable self-control during that marketing thing. But there was several spots when I looked over here and I thought, oh my gosh, I could have used a few different words than he had there.
I didn't think it was great.
But the overall, yeah.
I read it, a couple days ago.
Thank you, Chair Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr. My name is Aaron Dufault. I am the Salmon Policy Analyst for the Fish Program, and I will be giving you a briefing on Baker's sockeye today. I'm going to start off, give you a quick background and history, both from a facility standpoint in the Baker system, and then going into how this particular fishery is managed. Give you an indication of what harvest and sharing has been through the most recent 2017 season, the challenges that the department sees in this fishery going forward, some proposed solutions to address that challenge, then give you a quick summary, and then at the end of that, Edward's going to give you a brief summary on the Baker sockeye IAG transfer issue. So the Baker River was blocked by initially by the Lower Baker Dam in 1925. This originally created Lake Shannon in 1925. There at this point in time, there was a ladder for fish passage. Now, in 1959, the Upper Baker Dam, which enlarged Baker Lake, blocked upstream passage of fish. So since this time forward, passage of fish has been dependent on humans to truck adults up to the lake and or to get smolts out of the lake. It is a hatchery-dependent run. We do know there is low levels of natural spawning in the Baker Lake and in the river, but we have yet to quantify that at this point. To give you an idea of where fisheries are taking place, in the lower left-hand corner you'll see Skagit Bay and then Baker Lake and Lake Shannon above the Baker Trap. What's highlighted in blue there is tribal UNA. So again, that stretches all the way from Skagit Bay to the Baker Trap. Now, it's important to point out that there are two primary tribes that are fishing in these areas. Their UNAs, I believe, overlap, but one particular tribe fishes in the bay in the lower river, while another tribe fishes in kind of the lower river to the Baker Trap. So they fish in different areas. Now, overlaid on top of this is where our current recreational fisheries take place. In green there is the recreational in-river fishery, and then highlighted in orange up at the top is the Baker Lake fishery, where the majority of our recreational harvest takes place. A quick overview of how this fishery is managed. As I showed you, we're fishing primarily in the lake above the Baker Trap. We use those trap counts of fish going through the Baker Trap to manage this fishery primarily. Now, the graph to the right there, that squiggly line that's shown in orange, is an annual return graph. And so you can see there's quite a bit of daily variability in the counts that go, or excuse me, in the numbers of fish that pass through there. They are flow dependent. When you have more flow coming out of the dams, you get more fish showing up at the trap. Additionally, there is a 20-day migration time from fish showing up at the mouth to making it to the Baker Trap, and that will be very influential in how we manage this fishery. Now, treaty test fisheries do occur. They were started in 2012. Currently, we're building those data sets in hopes that we can use them for in-season management, though at this point in time, we don't have a timeline when that would actually occur. We use those Baker trap counts in what we would call in-season update models or ISU models. So we use those to predict a total run size of returning fish. Now, the reliability of those models greatly increases after we see a peak in counts, or what we might say a 50% migration date. Now, because it takes 20 days from a fish that could be caught in the Skagit Bay to make it to the Baker Trap, that limits the effectiveness of our in-season actions. And I'll go into that a little more in some of the following slides. So we have had a lot of public interest in this fishery. In 2014 and 2015, we had two public workshops. This was prompted following a poor return in 2014, which resulted in a sharing imbalance between the state and tribes, where the state recreational fishers had a much reduced realized share relative to the tribes that year. The primary outcomes from this particular, from these two workshops, was we had both a lake and river fishery priority. So we have some anglers who fish the lake and some anglers who fish the river. And so we have a sliding scale with run size about where we will prioritize preseason depending on our preseason forecast. We also identified bag limits, again, that are run size dependent within the lake. And then we also identified fishery start and end dates. Now, post those 2014-2015 workshops, we have continued to have dialogue with key stakeholders. Most recently, we had a meeting with Mr. Frank Urbeck sitting behind me on October 5th at the Issaquah Hatchery. To give you an idea of where we've been in this fishery in the last couple of years relative to the historical run size, on the y-axis here, we have run size and year on the x-axis. That very first data point is 1961 through 1991. So that's basically right after the Upper Baker Dam went in place and blocked fish passage. And you can see that the runs for that 30-year period were 2,000 to 3,000 fish on a scale there. Now, post-2010, you can see we have some greatly increased run sizes. These increases are largely the result of facility improvements operated by Puget Sound Energy, both at the Baker Trap, as well as a new updated hatchery and smolt collection facilities both in Baker Lake and Lake Shannon. Since 2010, when we had our first fisheries, we've seen quite a bit of variability in the annual sharing. So one thing I need to point out before we get looking at these shares is we're going to be kind of comparing apples to oranges of state versus tribal share. So I'm showing you here in that top little table that's treaty harvest and state rec share. So treaty harvest is just that, harvest of fish. Now, what I've determined as rec share is is a combination of fish that are caught in the lower river. Those are actually harvested fish. And then the numbers of fish that we put into the lake for harvest. We typically cannot harvest all of those fish using hook and line out of a lake. So, but that is part of the state share. Additionally, there is a 1,500 natural escapement goal. So again, the state rec share is what is caught in the river, what goes into the lake after subtracting that 1,500 in lake escapement. So over time, you can see from 2010 to 2012, this is kind of the early days of the fishery when you're still figuring out regulations and whatnot, and you can see that for each of those years, the state had a higher share than the tribes. And then as we're getting later on, highlighting 2014 and 2017 is where you see some pretty strong discrepancies between state and tribal share in both of those years. Now, there is a very easy answer to why you see the trends that are present there, is that it's relative to how we get on preseason forecasts. So again, the tribes are fishing in the lower river, and we have a 20-day migration between basically the mouth of the Baker River, of the Skagit River, and showing up to the Baker Trap. So when we under forecast, so fewer fish show up than what we anticipated preseason, based off of where those fisheries are occurring and the timeliness of when we can update the run, oftentimes we can only affect so much change in those tribal fisheries in the lower river when we have enough confidence to update the run. So you can see that consistently, if the run is under forecast, I may have misspoke earlier. When the run is under forecast, more fish are showing up than what we had anticipated preseason. Over forecast, the contrary. So because of where those fisheries take place, if we under forecast, it's very likely that the state will realize a greater share than the tribes. The converse is definitely true as well, and highlighted both in 2014 and 2017, where we had some pretty big discrepancies between state and tribal harvest sharing. And again, if you look at that table to the top right, over the total time of this fishery from 2010 through 2017, we do see pretty even sharing across all those years, but it doesn't dissuade that 2014 and 2017 are problem years that we would like to improve upon. So the challenge that we see, the department sees at this point, is despite sharing this relatively equal over time, on a single year, that harvest balance can be highly skewed, both to the state or the tribes, depending on how the run comes in. Additionally, we do lack timely data to adjust in-season harvest substantively at this point. The proposed solutions that are on the table, either proposed by WDFW or key constituents or angler groups to address this harvest imbalance, specifically on low return years, include technical improvements both to pre-season forecasts as well as in-season update models, to buffer harvest shares, to take a more conservative stance on pre-season planning, and additionally to expand river opportunity for the recreational in-river fishery. So I will go through each of those and discuss the pros and cons of each. As for technical improvements, starting with forecasts, the graph below in gray is the forecast, and in black is the in-season run, or excuse me, is the post-season run size. And you can see that on some years we're relatively close. On some years we're off by sometimes as much as 20-25%. Now it is important to say that this is within the range of forecast model error that you can expect for sockeye. With that said, every year we update these forecast models, and so we use a model that best predicts the data we've seen in this fishery. So it's updated annually, and it's a model selection process. However, with that said, there are some potential improvements that we can look to shore up the forecast performance. Currently, we do have no predictor of marine environmental survival, and that's the key unknown in these forecasts. We know how many smolts leave the system. We just don't know how many survive in the ocean. So there's some avenues we can go down to try to predict marine survival that we haven't done from the state side at this point. Additionally, we can look at technical improvements to in-season update models. Currently, as I said in a previous slide, we are limited to trap counts that are 20 days into the system at this point. So the timeliness of this ISU, it will remain an issue until we have a different data set to utilize that's more timely. With that said, we could add in covariates or explore if these covariates actually have a significant role in predicting in-season timing or abundance. So we can look at covariates like flow, which we know affects runtime, or excuse me, affects migration to the trap. We can look at test fishery data sets. Like I said, we do not know when those will come online. We're building those data sets as we speak, and that is our hope that they would provide a more timely update lower in the river as far as an indication on in-season run size. To kind of highlight this point, this is a graph from 2017 showing daily abundances at the trap, and on the left you'll see it says preseason 50% day, which was the 13th of July. Now, the data was a little bit variable around then. Our in-season update models weren't quite sure where they were pointing, and we weren't sure where the peak was at that point. So by the time we had enough information, both us and the tribes, to confidently say where the run was pointed, it was the 24th of July. And you can see how much of the remaining return is after that. And so that's what we're dealing with as far as how much of that run we can really influence from a harvest standpoint. We're limited on making a substantive change. So that's what we hope to improve upon. The idea to buffer harvest shares, this would set aside a portion of the harvestable surplus until we have confirmation of that preseason forecast. This has been proposed by some key constituents as well as other angler groups. The positive of going this route would be that it would reduce harvest imbalance when the run comes in below forecast. Some drawbacks from this approach is that it may limit some tribes from catching their share. As I said, not all tribes don't have one particular tribe fishes the bay in the lower part of the river. If they did not have access to a portion of their share until the confirmation of preseason forecast, it is possible that they would not be able to achieve their share. It is important to say that the tribes can take fish from the Baker trap. We have had those discussions with them previously. Their stances from a cultural standpoint, they would like to actually fish for their fish instead of showing up and getting it from the trap, I think just like our anglers would advocate for. So again, those if we were to limit their share, the fish could move past their UNA and limit their ability to catch their share. The department has concerns with this approach. At this point, we don't want to dismiss any ideas out of hand without thinking through all the potential implications. We would just need to make sure that we thought through these issues before we propose such ideas to the tribe. Looking at conservative preseason planning, this would make a conservative estimate of survival in those forecast models to reduce the likelihood of the run coming in below forecast. So this essentially has a similar outcome to what a buffer proposal would accomplish. This has been proposed again by various constituents and angler groups. Again, this would reduce harvest imbalance when the run comes in below forecast. The negatives from this approach, as we see it, this addresses a management issue by biasing a forecast model. So our forecasts rely on the best available science. In my previous position, I did quite a few forecasts for salmon species. From an ethical standpoint, I have issues with this. This is supposed to be a very scientifically driven process, and inserting a bias, I think, is a ethical issue. So again, this would also bias harvest against the tribes because we're predicting a lower number than what we actually, from the best science, what it would point to. And again, we have some concerns with this, but it is an option on the table that we're considering. The fourth option is expanding river opportunity. In the map at the bottom, you can see where our current fishery takes place from the mouth of, from Highway 536 to Gilligan Creek. If expanded, it would allow a greater proportion of our harvest to occur in the lower river, primarily before the update. So this, the issue that of us fishing behind the tribes in this scenario, we would be fishing again with a greater proportion before the update. Now, we have heard a lot of public input that support us expanding this fishery. In the past, we have been constrained by lack of funding to basically cover the additional monitoring needs. So we do have ESA-listed fish and river, and we have been, I wouldn't say required, but we have concerns with the impact, and we would like to monitor it to make sure that the impacts are within this fishery stay what we anticipate. So we lack resources to fund the additional monitoring at this point. Additionally, there is an increased risk of over-harvest because we're fishing prior to an in-season update. This is relatively small compared to the tribes our in-river fisheries. The max we've caughten is in the 3,000 fish range, and we're typically in this smaller fishery that you can see at the bottom, typically in the 500 to 1,000 range, and sometimes less than that. So it's a concern, but small relative to treaty fisheries that are occurring at the same time. So to summarize, the share is balanced on across the entirety of the time series relatively, though on a single or several years it can be highly skewed, which is largely dependent or solely dependent on that forecast performance. The next steps we would take to address the challenge at this point are technical, looking at the forecast and the ISU model performance. I do feel that I have to say that this will not solve this problem. It may shore up the sharing on those years, but it will not solve it solely. But we're looking to try to shore up those key years like 2014 and 2017. Looking to expand the river opportunity, this is most likely to increase recreational harvest in river and reduce that sharing balance prior to ISU. And we would continue to engage our angler groups and share in-season information so they can understand the constraints we're under and what we can really say with the information we have during the season. And now I'll pass to Edward over here to talk about the IDAG transfer.
Director Unsworth and Deputy Director Joe Storr. My name is Edward Eliezer, and I'll be giving you an update on the Baker Lake hatchery egg transfer. There's been significant concern since the recent closure of a portion of the Skokomish River to state anglers. It has been recommended by Puget Sound anglers and the Steelhead Trout Club of Washington that we do not transfer any eggs to the Skokomish until the Skokomish River is reopened to recreational fishery opportunities. Some stakeholders also have suggested that they would pursue litigation against the egg transfer if the Skokomish is not reopened. The transfer of sockeye eggs collected within the Baker River project owned by Puget Sound Energy to the Saltwater Park hatchery in Hoodsport, Washington, owned by Tacoma Power. The point of leverage in negotiation to negotiate the reopening of the Skokomish River is believed to be in the implementation plan for the egg transfer. There are a lot of details here about the FERC licensing, our role in the mitigation for FERC projects, whether or not this is a proper leverage tool, who owns the eggs, and the role of public input in the egg transfer. I'd be happy to come back to the commission to take a deeper dive on this issue to provide specific detail. As an update, I'd like to report I've been working with key stakeholders, Puget Sound Anglers and CCA, on the implementation plan and believe we have an agreeable path forward. Essentially, the egg transfer will move forward with the following stipulations. WDFW commit to reviewing the effectiveness of jump-starting the fishery, and WDFW would commit to just holding 500,000 eggs transferred each year for a period of 5 years, and then after the five-year period, have a public workshop to reevaluate where we're at. So that's my update, and any questions?
Questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
I don't know a lot about this egg transfer issue, but help me to understand a little bit. These are ratepayer-funded fisheries. This whole thing is funded by the ratepayers buying the electricity. I mean, that's the reality of it. How, if we're going to go ahead and start propagating sockeye and the hatchery on the Skokomish, is there going to be any recreational opportunity for those fish?
Excellent question, Commissioner. So part of the FERC agreement that Tacoma Power has is to, one of the stipulations in that agreement is to have recreational fishery opportunities. So as we see it, there's a possibility of three opportunities that would translate into, the first being saltwater. North of Bayock Rock, we'd have saltwater opportunity. We also see a possibility as the population grows of having a fishery in the North Fork of the Skokomish River and possibly Lake Cushman. I'd like to just to put this in perspective, working with the same co-managers that we're working on with this on the Baker project and on the Tacoma Power project, we brought the population of Baker from 99 sockeye in 1985 to almost 40,000 this year. I mean, that's substantial. And the co-managers' goals are 100,000 adults, and I believe we can achieve that in the next decade with the expanded infrastructure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand we have public comment on this, so I'll withhold some comments on possible solutions. But a question for the staff here. Is there a mitigation agreement with the power company now on the matter of sockeye on Baker Lake? And are the provisions of it essentially as we see them now? So in other words, is there an agreement, a mitigation agreement to produce sockeye, yes or no? And is it one that limits the production to the number of smolts that we see now?
So there's two different mitigation agreements that include sockeye, one in the Baker and one in the Skokomish. And the one in the Baker, the only thing that's really limiting that production is our understanding of how the juveniles interact with the environment and how we produce them. There is some other language in the FERC agreement where they're keeping the facility at a certain size until we hit maximum capacity for 5 years, and there'll be an expansion. The co-managers believe we're at that capacity, and we're going to monitor it for 5 years and then expand it farther. That's with the Baker facility. On the Skokomish facility, they have a goal of 2 million sockeye fry in the next few years. However, the North Sound co-managers, there's no agreement whatsoever that we would transfer eggs to make that happen because of the resource. The Skagit co-managers want the best possible harvest on those fish. and did not want to dip into that. Right now, the fish that we're using for that program represent about 1% of the population coming back, 400 fish.
I have a couple of questions about the possible solutions for the inequity that occasionally occurs as a result of the preseason forecast. The first is, you mentioned potential covariance. Do we have data already on the covariance that can go into the model, or are we going to have to start collecting that before we can move to that technical solution?
There are some. We do know that things like flow, we know that affects run timing of fish. And so we can use tribal catches in addition. There's some avenues we can go down. So yes, not necessarily do we need to start collecting new data to enter in. It's kind of more just getting the technical work done. We haven't had the time to do that as of yet. But yeah, there is data sets that we can plug in before this next season to see if we see any improvement in those ISU models.
Okay. And then my second question is, if we were to expand river opportunity, would that be reaching the same fishers, or are there ones who only fish the lake and only fish the river? So would we really be expanding opportunity for everyone?
You're right. So we do, while there are probably some folks who do fish the river and the lake, we do see that there's kind of two camps, folks who fish the river, folks who fish the lake, and they have their values about why they like to fish in those particular areas. So you're right. It would be achieving maybe a state global share situation where we're improving the share of the state, but we would potentially be addressing concerns from one particular angler or user group more than the other. So, yes, you're correct.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to provide a little bit of oversight because I live in Mount Vernon, so I'm fairly familiar with this issue, and I've had a few visits and a few phone calls and some hate mail and a few other things. This is a very much a rural community. I mean, it's very, very much rural, and I totally respect the tribes. The rights to fish for these fish. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I have no argument with that, and this is not about about the tribes. But to dig down, drill down on this a little bit, the Skagit River is the largest contributor, largest river into Puget Sound. It's the largest river, period. It's the largest producer of Chinook. But in 2017, on behalf of Recreational Opportunity, there was a very, very minimal fishery for spring Chinook, hatchery spring Chinook only for the recreational, a very minimal fishery. There was no coho fishing for the recreational community. There was no pink fishing for the recreational community. There was no chum fishing for the recreational community. There was no steelhead fishing for the recreational community. And there was no game fish, cutthroat or Dolly Varden, which there are lots of. So the only opportunity in town that supports those communities of Cedar Woolley and Hamilton and Concrete and Burlington, the businesses there, the infrastructure, is this sockeye fishery. That is why it is so important. These fish, these people will die for these fish. I mean, they'll drive to Eastern Washington to go catch sockeye. I think they're probably more popular than Chinook in some places. So that's why it's so important to try and find a reasonable balance. And it sounds like you're trying to do that, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Okay. That, I think we'll go to the public comment. So thank you, guys. And I think the next four, understand, I'm going to call up four, and you have 15 minutes. So in order, Frank, Al, Roger, and Ron. So when you all get your seats, then we'll get the clock running. And then when they're done, Norm, you have your chance to. I saw you back there somewhere.
He carries a big stick.
He carries a big pogey.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chairman Smith, is this on? I guess it is, yeah. Chairman Smith, members of the commission, and Director Unsworth, I'm Frank Urbeck, a longtime sport fishing advocate, prior member of a number of Fish and Wildlife Department advisory committees, current member of several sport fishing groups, including some of those that are represented here today by the other speakers. I will be sticking for myself today. Sport fishing leaders that follow me will be speaking for their groups on three controversial issues associated with Baker sockeye management. These are: one, the growing Baker sockeye harvest inequity; number two, the use of Baker sockeye to attempt a jump start of a sockeye run in the Skykomish River Basin; and three, closure of the Skykomish River to all recreational salmon fishing. You've heard about all three of those today one way or another. And now it's closed to Chinook and Coho, the Skokomish is, but if a harvestable sockeye run can be achieved, based on, again, the paper that Edward presented, we would also be denied a river fishery there. You were just given a presentation that ostensibly reflected extensive discussion I've had with the department staff. I was there on October 5th. I was the sport fishing rep. That was particularly that session, when I work session. When I reviewed the department's PowerPoint slides that were made available to the public last week and to the commission in advance, I found I was in disagreement with much of what was presented on the various slides. Some of it was just wording, and some of it was just fundamental disagreement with the conclusions. I appreciate very much that the department agreed to share my comments on each of these slides. These are in a handout that you should have already had, and they are on the table out there in the lobby, and so you have my response juxtapositioned, okay? And the issues are a bit complex, as you've already seen. Some take study to fully understand. Some, clearly, the department and the sport fishing community are not yet on the same page. The main problem is the ability to accurately make preseason forecasts to the Baker sockeye run. In all years, as you've already heard, when the actual run fell short of preseason forecast, the tribal harvest exceeded sockeye made available for sport fishing. And this is because the tribes began harvesting well before there's enough data for an in-season update. Since 2014, this has occurred 3 out of 4 years, with the 2017 imbalance being a record of nearly 9,000 fish when you include the broodstock for the Skykomish tribal hatchery, and they've taken broodstock 2 years now. Our prime areas of disagreement are, first, the seriousness of the growing. If you looked at the presentation and you didn't have the background, I think, like I have, you would draw the conclusion, well, over time, it's kind of balanced out, so what's the big deal? Well, there is a big deal, and especially if you take from 2014, it's growing. And so that's why we got serious. And this last year, with having that 9,000 imbalance, that really got everybody's attention. And so we have no reason to believe that trend won't continue. The second area of disagreement is over what to do. Our view is that there are good technical options for achieving a high likelihood of a long-term harvest fairness and equity between the three Skagit Basin tribes and the public. And we want to do that. We want to work with the tribes, and we've got to work it together, all three entities. The handout shows that the sport fishing community has asked the department to get co-manager agreement to explore one more conservative run forecasting until improvements in modeling and forecasting can be implemented, and or using a buffer up to 30%. We use a buffer, as you know, on the Columbia River Spring Chinook. That's where it got introduced because we kept missing and we were overtaking fish. And we seemed like that's a good idea. Whether 30% should be it or 10% or 20%, but at least it gives you an option for reducing that problem. Given the complexity and the seriousness of the situation and the inability so far for the department to adequately address the harvest imbalance issues, we ask that the commission have your fish committee work with us and the department to achieve a cooperation of the affected Skagit Basin tribes. And I agree, more analysis has to be done, as was talked about by Aaron, but we've got to get that together. We've got to show movement. There has to be some confidence that we are going to make a difference. We're just not going to go out there and tweak a little few thing and think it's going to solve the problem. It's not. And so we're willing to work together, but we think the Fish Committee, because you can't do that today as a commission, but the Fish Committee is designed, I think, to be able to deal with these kind of issues. It might be appropriate to have the Fish Committee also take a look at the implementation plan that Edward talked about and we're working on. I marked that up considerably, too, for the transfer of Baker sockeye 8 eggs to the Skokomish Saltwater Park sockeye hatchery. We also ask that you encourage Director Unsworth and Governor Inslee, who the governor's office has expressed some interest in getting involved, to renew their efforts with the Skokomish tribe to allow that recreational fishery to return, and that would help a lot. Thank you.
Thank you. Al?
My name is Al Senyal, and I'm the president of the Steelhead Trout Club. We're on the verge of celebrating our 90th anniversary year. I've served on numerous advisory groups for the state, including the Steelhead and Cutthroat Advisory Group, co-chairman for 8 years. I'm also a member of the Menno Valley Fly Fishers, and we have a second home over in Winthrop. The Steelhead Trout Club is engaged in both salmon and steelhead issues. Our members fish for both species. Our members have a very long history of fishing in Baker Lake for sockeye and on the Skokomish River. The Steelhead Trout Club attended both the Puget Sound Anglers CCA Skokomish Rally at the Noah Lacey office complex, about 150 people attending, and the protest rally at the George Adams Hatchery down on the Skokomish River. About 250 people or more attended that rally. The Steelhead Trout Club, with the help from the PSA, Puget Sound Angler Group, was responsible for securing the June Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife public meeting in Cedar Woolley, and which allowed sport anglers to share their concerns about the imbalance in the tribal sockeye harvest, some 16,500 fish this year, and a potential sport harvest of 7,200 sockeye that had been put into Baker Lake. A huge difference, a huge imbalance. To add insult to injury, we were then advised that as many as 2 million eyed sockeye eggs from as many as 1,600 sockeye, all coming from the sport share in Baker Lake, would be transferred to the Skokomish tribe. This agreement makes little sense in the face of the controversial nature of the Skokomish tribe closing the Skokomish River to sport fishing access and fish returning to the George Adams hatchery, which is a state hatchery. Co-management is apparently non-existent here. It appears to us that this is rewarding the Skokomish tribe for closing a very popular and long-running 50-plus year history of fishing for returning hatchery salmon to the Skokomish River. Traditionally, the sport harvest has been in the 5,000 to 15,000 hatchery range on Chinook and Coho. This year, the river was closed for the second year, and this year, some 35,000 surplus Chinook returned to the hatchery that could have been available for the sport harvest. We detailed our concerns as they developed to a letter early in the process to Director Unsworth back in 2017. This is currently there is currently no guarantee of any future salmon fishing opportunity on the Skokomish River, and we have a concern on Lake Cushman, where the current regulations read, and I quote, "There is no fishing for or retention of salmon allowed." This egg transfer program needs to be put on hold until the sport fishing harvest inequities for the Baker Lake sockeye run is addressed and the sport salmon fishery is reestablished on the Skokomish River. What's missing in the whole equation here is opportunity. opportunity for us to get our fair share on the Skagit River, and opportunity for us to fish on the Skokomish River. We support Frank Yerbeck's call for having the Commission Fish Committee engage in a review and oversight role regarding the Baker Lake harvest issues. We also ask the Commission to encourage Director Unsworth to renew his efforts in cooperation with the Governor's Office so that a sport fishing opportunity on the Skokomish River can resume in 2018. So we're talking about opportunity. We're talking about giving sockeye eggs or transferring sockeye eggs from our fishery to the Skokomish tribe, who has closed the Skokomish River with a state-funded hatchery on it. So it just doesn't make sense to us. Think about opportunity.
My name's Roger Gooden. I'm the chapter president for the CCA North Sound chapter, and we cover Skagit, Whatcom, and Island counties. I passed out earlier a handout, 3 pages, that had been sent out on the 17th of September to Director Unsworth and many of the staff, including Edward and so on and so forth, regarding some specifics on our comments, but I'm going to just highlight what we had put in that document here. So with the help of the Puget Sound Energy and the department, our local CCA North Sound chapter hosted the second annual Baker Lake Fishing Derby earlier this year, where we had 100 or so anglers competitively fishing for 3 days at the end of July. The event was enormously popular, both with the young kids, the families, and in particular with a whole lot of the businesses in the local area who had been really hammered by the shutdown of the Skagit on the 16th of July. In other words, the abbreviated season, no fishing. And as we also had to shut down other things in the Sound, it has become increasingly clear that the Baker Lake is becoming a very big destination for people coming from all over because it's working well. So we believe that we have a conservation problem with the sockeye, and we need to return to the equitable sharing as outlined. And we need your leadership to help guide through that minefield to get it all back on send again. So, firstly, conservation comes first. And given that preseason forecasts for Baker Lake sockeye have been too high for 4 of the last 5 years, and there continues to be an imbalance in sharing, we believe that there should be a conservation buffer set up of at least 30% applied to preseason forecasts to enable an achievable preseason harvest management objectives to be obtained. And this common sense approach that really puts the resources first. Secondly, with the conservation buffer in place, fisheries management can better adjust harvest targets mid-season with actual up-to-date data. And clearly, with a fish trap at the base of the Lower Baker Dam, daily fish counts are available from Puget Sound Energy. All the necessary infrastructure is in place to make an effective and timely adjustments to attain mid-season harvest objectives. Again, this is another common sense approach that puts the resource first while effectively managing for harvest goals. Lastly, and this is going to be a little bit different for you, we think, as a result of all of the back and forth, this meeting we had at Cedar Woolley, we think the department needs to be a little bit more transparent on the management of this fishery and other fisheries. We recommend putting yearly Baker Lake sockeye harvest goals on the department website. This should, at a minimum, include hatchery escapement, hatchery goals, tribal harvest goals, non-tribal harvest goals, and with real-time updates coming from all of the equipment that's there, they can be shared with the public over a website. And let's put this out in public. And what this again does is it shows a common sense approach that demonstrates that our fisheries managers are indeed putting the resource first. So thank you very much for letting participate in this exercise. And lastly, I want to add a little footnote that says that CCA North Sound is begun working with the Department of Puget Sound Electric Energy to host a third Baker Lake Sockeye Derby in July 2018.
When did you get the short end of the clock? I'm kind of timid, so thanks. Thanks for bringing me to this Amway convention today, and now we'll get started here. Again, thanks everybody for inviting us to talk today. I truly believe we have probably one of the hardest states' issues to deal with, probably in the United States, if not sometimes the world. We have issues constantly that are beyond what anybody else can believe. If you go to any kind, which I know all of you have been to different places working with fisheries issues, and when it comes to Washington State and tribal issues, it's hard to even explain. And I would just want to say thanks to the staff for working so hard. A lot of times it's really, really tough to get where you're trying to go when you keep getting knocked down. And we really appreciate that, and it's a tough fishery. For instance, working with NOAA, they were talking to me about different issues inside of our Puget Sound, and it was to try and do more limiting on our recreational fisheries, which we weren't the problem, and it kept going and going. I said, okay, what about the tribes? And they said, what about them? I said, they have UNAs inside all these areas. How do you propose to pay to get them off of there? I said, you keep forgetting we have a different issue than everybody else that you deal with. And this is huge here in the Puget Sound. And here we are with this today. And he goes, yeah, I just hate doing politics in Washington State. That's what I had a NOAA official tell me. I said, and this is one of the reasons we're here. Our North of Falcon process, this year the Skokomish tribe was the tough negotiator that told the other tribes, if anybody signs on for any fishing in the Skokomish River, we will go completely nuclear and nobody is going to go fishing this year. So it was a pretty tough, a real tough road for our WDFW people, and they took a pretty good beating over it. But I've sent two letters to Guy Miller, the chairman of the Skokomish tribe, asking us to get together, let's talk about it, let's see if we can get back on the river. And there was no reply. And I want to thank the department for letting us have that rally out there at the George Adams Hatchery. But where we are today is, what options do we have to try and make this work again? I mean, one of them was thought of was to go fishing anyway, because probably most of you understand that the Solicitor General gave the Skokomish tribe the other half of the river. So we have one side of the river was theirs, one side was ours. Well, they deemed it theirs. And this is something we're going to work on. So basically, they effectively took us off the river. I have friends that have properties out there, and one of the biologists happens to be renting a house from him. And I've heard some things of where they're going is pretty crazy. And from what I can understand, it's a total takeover of the area. So what options do we have on the table to play this? We have last year, as we said earlier, 2016, we had 32,000 surplus hatchery fish to our George Adams Hatchery. 35,000 in 2017, and yet we can't take our fish. But if we give them eggs, then we can set something up for later so we can get the sockeye fishery going. So I think this, we're going to have to play hardball again. And I do want to make sure that we understand the tribes are not one entity. There's many, many tribes. And we work with a lot of them. We're friends with a lot of them. And we've had them help us on many issues. But this is just another one of the tough deals we're going to have to work through. We worked together for the early winter steelhead. Frank, Al's group, PSA, CCA, Attorney General, WDFW, and the tribes came together, and we were getting our early winter steelhead program shut down by the Wildfish Conservancy. But by coming together and fighting, we were able to undo that. And I would actually like to see if the commission would assign, like, the fish committee to maybe work on this with us and see if we can and further make something come out of this, come with a positive to the table. Thank you, Brad.
Not over time. We let you have longer than the 15 minutes.
It's my timidness.
Let me change, before I open it up for any other questions, let me just change track for a moment here. Earlier this afternoon, we had an involved discussion about getting youth involved more in a lot of different ways. Some of you might have heard that discussion. I think the commission's will tee up the idea of how can we do this. And the word partnership surfaced a lot, that this is something that we're all in it together. Because we're talking about, as we talked about, who are we look at, I look at four people that we probably have a lot in common, date-wise, you know, chronologically. No youth out there. So can you guys, there's three state organizations represented right there. So can we count on those state organizations to be partners in a youth initiative as we put things together? I'm just throwing that out because there's a lot that separates us, but this is the unifier, the ultimate unifier. And when we talk partnerships, we got to do this as partners. So, okay. I'll take that as a good verbal and a good nod, because you will hear more about this, but I'm gonna start this little strategy with groups that always come up in front of us to start this a little momentum going, to see if at least to get people thinking. Because okay, that's my two cents. Any comments on this? We are running late. Okay, fine. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Oh.
I'm going to point this to Director or Commissioner Carpenter, because you live here. Do you see any good outcome? What do we need to do? I hate to put you on the spot, but I do love to put you on the spot.
We like it.
We've got primarily two tribes in that system, and they're both good, meaningful tribes with treaty rights. They respectfully want to catch their fish, and they sell their fish on the roadside to the public, and it's as it should be. I don't have any argument with that. I think we need to reach across the aisle and get with them, with the agency, and try and share our views and seek a better understanding of each need, the need of the tribes and the need of the non-tribal sector. I think that's what we need to do. I don't want to turn this into a witch hunt at all. This is a wonderful opportunity for non-tribal folks and for tribal folks. It's the only thing we got on that river right now, and I want to see it grow. And I can't speak for my colleagues that are on the fish committee. If they feel that this is something that they want to task internally, so we can talk, the four of us, with staff, and come up with some visions we can bring to the full commission, I'm fine with that. I'm absolutely fine with it, because I think it's worth doing. I think it's totally worth doing. And yes, that's what I believe, Jay.
Thank you. And I think what you all put forth in writing will help that.
Jay King. Yeah.
Thank you. Back to putting Larry on the spot one more time. Do you feel the suggestion of a 30% buffer, or some number of buffer, could be agreed upon with the tribes eventually, considering many of those fish would pass the UA?
It needs to be discussed. I think I don't really have my arms around that yet, or nor do I know what their response might be. But I think that we can find commonality of working together, because the non-tribal sector is supposed to get X percentage of fish, as are the tribes. And I think we can do that. I just think we got to sit down across the table from each other and talk it through. and find ways to continue to grow that fish. You're talking about potentially 100,000 sockeye coming into that system. That's a pretty big deal, and I'd love to see that happen in my life.
I might suggest that we're going to have a discussion about committees tomorrow, which is kind of brought to my mind because we're being asked by the four gentlemen on the panel to take this to the Fish Committee to further review it, which I don't think is a bad idea at all. But I was also reading through some of the notes on our committee layout, and we're perfectly able to invite people to our committees. Yep. And I would suggest that this is a good example of how committees can function by inviting maybe some of these folks and some of the folks from the tribes to a committee meeting where it's a little more informal. You can discuss things and totally within the boundary of how our committees are set up.
I think, Jay, that's a great idea, and I look forward to that discussion tomorrow myself.
Maybe this is for Larry, maybe this is for Steph. Why is sockeye still the only fishery on the Skagit? When I first came onto the commission, we would have people from Skagit come with signs about CNR for steelhead. We've got an abundance of Dolly Varden. Why is it NOAA? I mean, do they need to be at the table too? Why is this fishery so limited?
Well, this could go on for a long time. There's been over $80 million spent on the Skagit River in the last decade on habitat. I think I have that number right. And the habitat wasn't bad a decade ago. It's some of the best habitat in Puget Sound. But whether it's ocean conditions or smolt predation on the way out, I don't know if anybody in the room, I don't know if Ron Warren knows what the problem is, and he's the godfather of this, but we're not getting any fish. If we're getting smolt out, we're not getting anything back. The U.S. section of the Pacific Salmon Commission is meeting as we speak, negotiating with Canada and, of course, Alaska to rewrite the Chinook Annex for the Pacific Salmon Commission for the next 10 years. That's huge. There's too many northern interceptions of our fish, primarily in Alaska and then Canada. So there's a lot of issues there, but that's a huge river that I remember, and that was a long time ago, but I remember as a youngster, you used to have to go down to the local Quonset hut where you could get breakfast at 2 o'clock in the morning and then get your boat launched so you could get down to the spot where you wanted to fish. And within three-eighths of a mile along the Skagit River just south of Mount Vernon, there would be 100, 150 boats anchored up. Now you don't see any. You don't see any. It's pitiful. And anyway, there's a lot of work to do, Kim, and I appreciate the question.
Come on, Carpenter.
Time, though.
Yeah. There again, back to the buffer. And I thoroughly understand that the tribal people want to catch as many fish as they can and go out fishing. But there again, if we were to implement a buffer, and then once the fish went to the fish trap, couldn't you adjust those discrepancies if there was too many? And I mean, I know it isn't as glorious as going out and catching them, but there again, they're still going to have a fishery. And then as far as economical end of the deal, they could get them there. Is that completely on drugs or what?
Well, no, but they prefer to be autonomous, and their tribal fishermen want to catch the fish in a gill net, not out of the trap. I mean, the short version of sockeye, they're fun to catch on a fishing pole as well. But the best thing about a sockeye is when you put it on your plate and eat it.
Right.
I mean, that's the best thing about it. It's a wonderful table fish. And these are world-class sockeye. They're 6-7 pound fish. So there's some work to do. There's some dialogue that has to take place. I think the staff is prepared to start that. I believe the Fish Committee will engage in working through this, and I appreciate the support of my colleagues.
And we will take just one more short one, Don, because we have a number of people that want to public input for item 12, so you can refer.
No, I'm fine. We have one more public comment to hear before
right.
We get into deliberations.
Right. Okay, thanks, guys. And Mr. Pogge?
We have five people. Next one.
Are we ready?
Yep.
I brought my own timer. I've been absent here for several months, and that's because I've been on a safari. I've done some world-class fishing in the Chesapeake Bay for stripers, some world-class fishing for yellowfin tuna in Mexico. I come home, and I can't say the same for Washington State. My name is Norman Reinhardt. I'm the president of the Kitsap Pogge Club. There is a fourth organization that borders Puget Sound, and that's us. Approximately 200 member families, which equates to approximately 500 people, most of them living in Kitsap and Mason County, although we do have a scattering of people throughout the country who support our efforts. To the chair, I can tell you that we support two kids' parties every year, one in Gorst, one in Island Lake. We need to get our kids involved, and we've been doing it for decades. We need to continue to do that, engage our youth. Now, I'm here for one reason, and that's the Skokomish River. It's been closed for 2 years. I cannot go throughout the county of Kitsap or Mason without hearing, why can't I fish the Skokomish River when we have over 30,000 fish come back? Why are the commercial nets that are allowed to take kings, the non-Indian commercial nets, being limited to just Hoodsport? Why aren't they in front of the river to take some of those 30,000-plus fish? We're not being allowed to do that. And now we hear that not only have they closed the river, they are now going to open the sockeye hatchery, and I've heard a number from 400 to 1,000 sockeye, taken out of an entirely different recreational fishery, and who is going to pay the price for those fish? Are the Skagit tribes going to kick in half those fish to the Skokomish Nation, or is the entire number coming from the recreational community? Does that mean in years of slim sockeye runs that we will have to forego yet another fishery to supply a neighbor who closed their river? That's my question, and that's my statement. Why are we rewarding a neighbor who is behaving badly? Why? I understand the fish may not belong to WDFW, but we most certainly are supporting that transfer with our scientists and with our staff. Why are we doing that? I am not a proponent for closing hatcheries. You will soon see me in a movie. A very short movie. I cooperated with the Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission in making a short film about hatcheries, about the need for hatcheries. But I come here today because my membership has demanded that I come here, and I make this suggestion. There is yet another option. Someone mentioned playing hardball. If we are producing 30,000 surplus fish at George Adams, why are we producing them? Why are we not looking at that production schedule and reducing it, not eliminating it, but reducing it? I fully understand. I tried to have the department make a comment to me. I wrote an email earlier this year. I got no comment. I wanted to know what would happen if the George Adams hatchery closed. I fully realize that that hatchery contributes to the fisheries in other areas of Puget Sound. Area 5, they're struggling. Area 4 supports Alaska fisheries, supports Canadian fisheries. I'm not here to say close that hatchery, but I am here to say the department has said very little to the public in western Puget Sound about the situation on the Skokomish River. We've heard nothing. The Attorney General's office has not, as far as I know, responded to the Solicitor General that made that ruling. Why are we not going to court and having this issue clarified once and for all? And if there's some problems with that, why isn't the Attorney General's office and the department coming to Western Puget Sound and explain it to us? We are hearing nothing. and we are very, very unhappy. I know my time is up. What I would ask is if there's anyone here that would be willing to come to my bogey club the second Wednesday in November and explain what's happening, not only with the Skokomish, but with the Baker Lake problem, please let me know. I'll put you on my agenda.
He's right there.
Thank you very much.
He's
right behind you.
Stand it up.
Yep.
Ron Warren.
Ron?
Yep.
I thought it might be. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Oh. And we can move into item, the last one, which is open public input. And we do have a number of people that want to. And I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not quite sure where the end of that.
You can be the end.
Conversation. So, is it that all of these issues that we've heard will be made as some sort of an assignment to the Fish Committee for further deliberations, and that there won't be any more discussion?
Yeah, I think that's what you want to answer. Yeah.
Which is if that's where the commission wants to go, that's fine. I just didn't know if that's how this ends.
Any recommendations you have are welcome, Don.
It's a big topic. There's a lot of issues there, and I know, Mr. Chairman, you got your eye on the clock. So having this all go to the Fish Committee meeting sounds more reasonable than spending another hour now, maybe.
Yeah, because we have another committee meeting after this meeting. So, yeah.